The Book of Fears. Here's the quote. To be afraid is to have more faith in evil than in God. Quote by Emmett Fox. Here's the summary. Nothing stands in the way of individual progress and growth except for fear. What is this emotion which so controls our lives? What can be done to counter its devastating effects? What can be done to eliminate fear? There are only 7 basic fears, and these are the subjects of this book. What is fear? I'm sure you've experienced fear. I'm sure you've felt that gnawing inside, that sickening dread. I'm sure you've encountered the loss of power and energy, the feeling of helplessness as fear takes over. What is it, this fear? Fear is an apprehension of something that might happen. The key words are might happen. Fear is based on what we believe might happen. It is not dependent upon an actual happening. You may find you have a fear of poverty. This means you fear or have an apprehension of being poor. You are not poor, but you dread that state. Now, if you were, in fact, poor, totally penniless, and at the mercy of charity, you would not fear poverty. Experiencing the state of poverty, you might dislike it, loathe it, or be frustrated, but you would not fear it. So it is with all fears. Fear exists only in the unknown. Everyone has fears. I have them, and so do my wife and children. Every leader, great or small, that I know has had fears at some point in his life. So the question is not whether or not you have them, but rather, what do you do with them, and what do you let them do to you? It is a question of who's in control. To let fear take over is to let all your energy and personal power pour into that fear. It will become so large that nothing else seems to exist. Your world will revolve around that fear. Have you not known someone whose every decision was based on fear? I know an older gentleman who hesitates to make decisions. I've got to be sure, is his inevitable comment. Needless to say, he does not make decisions. His life just happens. That is fear in almost total control. On the other hand, you can choose to be the one in charge. Faced with a fear, you can decide to continue on, to march ahead even though the worst may happen, and to try even though you may fail. This is what a leader must do. This is the meaning of being a leader. It is no weakness to have fears, only to back down. In all things, to think is to create. This fundamental law is as valid in regards to fear as it is in any other area of your life. If you think about fear and what might happen, then that is exactly what will happen. How could it be otherwise? Those pictures and thoughts you hold in your mind most of the time will materialize. You will attract what you fear most. The law must work in both directions, for what we desire and for what we dread, or it is not the law. If this were not so, then you would have no choice. You would have no control. There would be no freedom. Liberty could not exist. Thus, fear and adversity are necessary. Through them, man can experience the thrill of overcoming and the joy of success. Through them, man has the opportunity to grow, provided he realizes they are experiences and not the final act. Fear is an experience, not a fact. I like to equate running into a fear to running into a stop sign. The stop sign means to stop, then proceed with care and watchfulness. That is easy enough to do, and it makes sense. Now apply that to fears. When I run into a fear, that is, when I suddenly find myself face to face with a fear of something or someone, I pause. With my inner eyes and ears, I look around to see what's happening. Then I proceed with care and watchfulness. The fear has become a friendly reminder to watch, look, and listen. There are only 7 basic fears that I can identify. Fear of poverty, fear of imperfect health, fear of pain, fear of failure, fear of loneliness, fear of death, and fear of the unknown. Cannot all superstitions be traced to one of these? Are not amulets, charms, and lucky pieces made to ease one or more fears? Can we not trace most strong negative reactions to one of these 7 fears? In my own life, I know I can. During the rest of this book, we will study each of these fears in depth, learning not only what it is and how it creeps into our lives, but also the practical steps to gain control. The goal is to change the fear from a barrier to a stepping stone upwards. First, let's consider the fear of poverty. The fear of poverty is the fear of losing material possessions. In its extreme, and particularly in the poor nations of the world, it can be seen as the fear of starvation and the fear of having no place to live. In our modern industrial cultures, the fear of poverty shows its head as a fear of being laid off, or a fear of being eaten up financially by taxes, rising costs, and medical payments. The fear of poverty generally appears in the physical realm, but it is not limited to this. The fear of mental poverty would include the fear of losing creativity or thinking ability. This would mean a mental starvation. A fear of spiritual poverty would be a fear of being shut off from the infinite, a fear of spiritual starvation. It's easy to recognize someone with a fear of poverty. Those who fear poverty cling desperately to what they have. They hang on to all the things as though their lives depended upon it. The chief demand is security. They're materialistic. Yesterday, the news reported an incident of a man who resisted a robbery attempt and lost his life doing so. How much money did he have on his person? $4.28 and a watch worth maybe $25? Would he really exchange his life for something under $30? If you asked him, I believe he would not. It was the fear of poverty and not the actual cash value which claimed his life. What price are you paying now, today, to this great fear? The truth is that nothing that you have is permanently yours. You only have possession, use, and control for the short time of your existence on earth. All things in reality are a part of the infinite. Who can say who owns what? 100 years from now, who will own your house or business? Not you. But, you counter, my children will, and I must hang on to everything for them. So I ask you again, 1,000 years from now, who will own your house or business? Not you nor your children. Do you even care? I would hope not. So why cling desperately when to do so imperils your very life and existence? I know of a couple who lived for many years in an apartment, saving for when they could buy their own home. The weekends were spent camping in the mountains or traveling to fascinating places. They loved to hike and explore, to watch and observe all of nature. Finally, 1 year, they had enough money to buy a house. Suddenly, the weekends were spent cleaning, mowing the lawn, weeding and watering, things neither like to do. So what is the value of that possession? What they clung to so desperately was the very thing which denied them liberty. They were possessed, not the possessor. On the practical side, to overcome the fear of poverty is to overcome the fear of limitations. If you knew you could replace everything you might lose, would you worry? Chances are you wouldn't. So the key to controlling this fear is to know you can recreate all that you have. Set up a savings program if you don't already have one. This will give you a sense of security in knowing that you can start again if need be. Or develop alternative vocations if you desire to assure job security. When you realize that there are literally thousands of jobs you could fill or train yourself to fill, how could you possibly fear poverty? It will not happen. For those willing to work and those seeking a better way of life, there is no poverty. Every loss becomes a greater gain. It is all in the attitude. Very early in my adult life, I had an experience which will perhaps illustrate this point. I had worked at various jobs for several years when I decided I wanted to try it on my own. With the help of my parents and taking every cent that I owned, I was able to scrap together and borrow just enough money to buy a filling station. I was manager. My dad and my brother worked in the station. It was close, but we held on. For a while, that is, until I had an accident which kept me out of work for many months. I could not afford to hire a manager, even temporarily, to replace me. As a result, I lost the station. I could have let this become the end of the world. I was definitely experiencing poverty. But instead of laminating a total loss, I soon found other more productive avenues opening. As I sit here today writing these words, I have a very clear realization. If I had not lost that filling station, I might still be there today. As long as you personally feel you are the source of all you possess, you will have a fear of poverty. As long as you look to the balance sheet to determine your worth, you will be in danger of losing all. Only when you count as your wealth, your attitude, wisdom, and personal power are you free of poverty. For these three things are the ingredients which enable you to know that you know you can recreate all that you have. The next fear we shall consider is the fear of imperfect health. This would include the fear of illness, the fear of physical deformity, the fear of old age, and the fear of mental deterioration. Here, too, we find the fear of cancer, the fear of polio, and the fear of paralysis. The fear of imperfect health is, indeed, very common. Perhaps that is why we have so very much of it. As with all the fears, those people with the greatest amount of fear try to mask that fear. By denying it, they think it'll go away. It will not. By their actions, you can clearly see the presence of fear. The fear of imperfect health is seen in those who try to look and be younger than they are, in those who totally avoid any form of physical risk, in those who overemphasize health, physical fitness, drugs and medication, and in those who incessantly talk and worry about who has what and who is in which hospital. But the strongest fear is found in people who dislike, avoid, or show prejudice towards their fellow human beings who are imperfect physically or mentally. How many times have you avoided talking to someone who is handicapped? How many times have you turned away from someone who is retarded? How much longer will you allow this fear to control you? If you find this fear very strong with you, there is much you can do to wrestle back control. On the physical level, you might set up a balanced nutritional and exercise program. Then trust that program. If you constantly check on your health, you will only intensify your fears. You can seek out friendships with all ages and, by doing so, retain a vitality and interest in life no matter what your age. Old age is only a state of mind. Keeping up with events and styles keeps you forever in the mainstream of life. And of course, you can learn to accept and love those who already bear the burden of physical or mental problems. They are absolutely no different from you. They want love. They want acceptance. They want happiness. They want to have a perfect mind and body. See them this way, and you will have mastered the fear of imperfect health. If, on the other hand, you have already found yourself with imperfect health of body or mind, then may I suggest this beautiful formula by Hubert H. Humphrey. As long as I have a breath of life, I'm going to try to live actively and be a part of the daily life of my family and friends, my job, neighborhood, community, and country. I'm not changing my life because I have had cancer. Substitute your own problem for the word cancer. I know of no better recipe for living life in the face of personal handicaps than this. Remember, too, that the source of all power, physical, mental, and spiritual, is ultimately the superconscious. This power flows through you to the degree you allow. It is a very real source of strength, energy, and well-being. This is where health begins. Thus, you yourself are the true source of your own physical and mental condition. You will be as you see yourself to be, as you program yourself to be. Visualize, affirm, and know you are as you desire to be. Throughout the book of these manuscripts, I have stated over and over a fundamental fact I know to be true. The infinite power, which is God, Spirit, Truth, whatever, does not favor one person over another. One is not made greater and the other smaller. One is not given more and the other less. One is not made perfect and the other not. That cannot be. All are equal. All have the same rights, which cannot be denied. You have a right to perfect health. Claim it. The third fear to be considered is the fear of pain. For many, many people, the fear of pain is far stronger than the fear of imperfect health or even death. The fear of suffering pain is the fear of being hurt physically or mentally. It is the basis of the fear of going to a dentist or a doctor or the fear of falling. On the mental level, it is the fear of mental anguish and wounded pride. If you fear pain, you probably know it and take great lengths to avoid even minor injuries. The overuse of medications and drugs, including the illegal use of drugs, is a symptom of a person who fears pain. The drug dulls the mind, making it insensitive to the pain. The mental pains so ardently avoided by modern society include unhappiness, dissatisfaction, disillusionment, and confusion. Pain is not pleasant for anyone. It certainly is not something to be sought after. But need we fear it and let that fear control our lives? Is it wise to go to all the lengths to avoid it? I think not. Pain has a purpose, a very valid purpose. Whether physical or mental, it is a message which says, there is a problem here, see to it. Pain is the main signal that something is wrong in our lives. Without physical or mental pain, few would search for the path to growth, Without physical or mental pain, few would seek out their inner self. So when pain comes, let us first listen to the message. Use meditation and the various mental techniques of assistance and workshops to discover the message. Usually, with understanding, the pain disappears. The message has been heard. If you have experienced prolonged and intense pain, either physical or mental, you may find you have the feeling that the previous discussion is too simplistic. It is too easy an answer to just listen to the message. Is it? With all problems, are they not complex and intense while we remain in the midst of the problem and simple as we look back on them? Life is not complicated, but we make it so. Try this solution and see what happens. The only way you can know something works is to experience it for yourself, in your own life and problems, that it works. Fear of failure is the fourth fear we will discuss. It is the fear of losing face or appearing less than in the eyes of others. More than any other fear, it stops progress cold. It is the fear of failure which is responsible for the inability of a person to make a decision or the hesitancy to take a risk. If you find you've been standing still in your life, look and see if this fear holds you in its grip. The reality is that there is no such thing as failure. Let me say it again. There is no such thing as failure. Failure is a state of mind. Failure is an attitude. Failure is a way of looking at something. It has nothing to do with the facts. Any experience can be thought of as a failure if you choose so. So why not choose instead to consider all experiences as successes? For example, suppose you run for an elective office and lose. The question is, have you failed? Have the people had an opportunity to express their wishes? Have you had an opportunity to express your ideas? Have the laws of the land been duly executed? If you answer yes to these questions, then where is the failure? Or another example, suppose you don't score high enough on the state's driver exam to qualify for a driver's license. Does that mean you have failed? Have you learned that you need to better understand the laws of the state and the rules that apply to driving? Have the people of the state been protected from having drivers on the road who do not understand the rules? Have you learned what you need to know to get your license? If you answer yes, then where is the failure? Both you and the people of the state are better off, which I would call a success. Usually we apply the term failure to any experience in which we do not like the outcome. A politician does not like losing an election, so he calls himself a failure. A teenager does not like being denied a driver's license, so that too becomes a failure. Outcomes which are liked are called successes. An executive likes her job, therefore she considers herself successful. A husband likes the way his marriage is going, so he calls it successful. The problem arises when we forget that it is the experience we like or dislike, and instead consider the like or dislike as applying to ourselves. Now the outcome of an experience becomes the gauge of personal worth. This is the point of despair and depression. Perhaps you've already found yourself there. The way out of failure and the way to avoid the feeling of failure are the same. It begins with a separation of experience and self. You have experiences, and you are more than your experiences. What you experience is only a reflection of where you are and have been, not what you will become. Once you have separated the experience and self, you can then see the experience for what it is, a growth opportunity. Whether you have liked or disliked the outcome, you have learned. Use that knowledge. If you like the outcome, use it to create other similar outcomes. If you dislike the outcome, use the knowledge to avoid any more such outcomes. Either way, you benefit. It's all a matter of attitude. I have had so many failures in my life that, by comparison, your life would probably seem to be all successes. I've been kicked out of school and failed classes. I have bankrupted a business and wiped myself out financially. I have had a marriage totally shattered and my children refused to talk to me for a while. I've been kicked out of Bible college as being undesirable and have even had people try to kill me. I mean, there are more, but what is the point of listening to those? I have changed my attitude since those times. I'm not proud of all the things that I've done, but I do see how they've helped me to be the person I am today. I have become the person I want to be by growing through these experiences. I've learned to achieve success by understanding my so-called failures. In essence, these manuscripts are not the result of my successes, but rather the result of my failures and what I've learned from them. Failure and success are attitudes, you choose what you display. The next fear to be considered is the fear of loneliness. Not only is this the fear of being alone, but also the fear of losing love, of not being liked, or of not finding love. It is a fear and feeling of isolation. Those who have this fear cling desperately to those around them. They are possessive of their family and friends, even to the point of jealousy. Here, too, we find the person who always tries to please or who is always the nice guy. People who have a fear of loneliness often fill every moment of their days with business. They see happiness as dependent on the acceptance and presence of others. My heart aches for those who fear and experience loneliness because loneliness is an admission of a perceived separation between the conscious mind and the levels of the subconscious and superconscious. The isolation felt is not so much an isolation on the physical plane as it is an isolation on the spiritual plane. There is no loneliness for those who realize the infinitude of the superconscious. How could there be? Each person exists in the infinite, within and without. Nothing can be lost. No one can be separated. To do so would be to make the infinite power finite. Using the subconscious level of the mind, you can communicate with any person, living or dead, far or near. Regardless of what happens on the physical plane, the subjective communication level cannot be cut. Go even deeper to the superconscious level, and everyone is one. Loneliness is seen to be an illusion. Loneliness is the creation of a limited conscious mind. If you find yourself alone or without a love, loneliness does not seem like an illusion. It seems real. I understand that my conscious mind is creating this feeling, you say. But how do I stop it? You can start by liking yourself, just as you are, with or without other people. If you like you, others will like you too. Then know that what you give, you will receive. Give love and acceptance, and you will receive love and acceptance. Give companionship, and you will receive companionship. How many times have you asked others to share a meal, a movie, or a day with you? Or are you waiting to receive an invitation first? Are you waiting for them to give before you give? If you are, it'll be a long wait. That I can guarantee you. When we fear loneliness, we tend to cling to those around us and, by doing so, drive them further away. Who wants to have someone clinging to them? I don't, and I'm equally sure that you don't. In fact, I try to cut off those who cling because they curtail my liberty. They drag my thoughts down and surround me with limits. Those I seek to keep around me are individually strong. Our bonds of friendship and love are made by free choice. They are bonds that do not bind, nor are they easily severed. This, then, is the way to keep relationships. Give each person freedom, including yourself. The fear of death is the sixth of the fears we are considering. The fear of death is the fear of not living and not living life fully. It is the fear of being forgotten or being unimportant. It is the fear that life has no meaning. Every day we see the evidence of this fear, graphic accounts of deaths in papers and magazines, numerous TV programs involving deaths, millions spent on prolonging life, even when there is no hope of recovery, exactly following superstitions, and an unknown amount spent on fortune tellers, good luck charms, and seances. Death is the topic of the dinner table and the research lab alike, and yet we keep it at a distance. We talk of the death of a man in the street, or the slaughter taking place in a faraway country, yet it is taboo to speak of our own death, or that of a loved one. We visit the dying and reassure them that they will make it, even when we know that they will not. Why do we do this? Why do so many seem more death-oriented than life-oriented? Why do we always keep death uppermost in our minds and at the same time push it away when it gets close? We do this, you know. To understand death is to understand life. Death is an integral part of life. It is the culmination of every life just as birth is the beginning. There is no avoidance, no escape. You will experience death. The only question is when. Are you ready for it now? It may come tomorrow. Could you go feeling good about your life and what you've left behind? If you cannot answer these questions with an unqualified definite yes, then is it not time to start living now? Now, this minute as you listen to this tape. Is it not too late? It is never too late. 5 months of life, fully lived, are worth far more than 5 years or even 50 of mere existence. To live life to the fullest is the point of this book and these manuscripts. I believe life is more beautiful because of death. Do we not cherish the daffodils and lilies that bloom but for a few short weeks each spring? They are more precious because they are not always with us. So it is with life. Life is more dear to us knowing that we cannot always have it. We seek to use our time wisely, not knowing how much we have. We remember the small things, bright sunny days, the song of a sparrow or the sound of a gentle rain, because we might not experience them again. This is as it should be. I'm glad I don't know when I'm going to die. I'm glad I'm forced by death to live each day in the now. My life is far richer because of death, and so is yours. I don't fear death, nor do I seek it. I simply am ready. What happens at death? I don't know. Nor will I pretend to know or bore you with my beliefs and the reports of those who almost died. What I do know is that death is a total individual experience. That's beautiful. Do you realize what that means? No matter what you have done in your life, no matter how heavily you have relied on others, no matter how ardently you have avoided the risks of life, you will, through death, be forced to experience and grow on your own. You will be forced to stand on your own, like it or not, as all the props of material existence are stripped away. You will grow. There's no standing still in the face of death. It seems to me that the infinite power, God, Spirit, or Truth, in its wisdom, is much like a mother bird. When the time is right, the young are pushed out of the nest, and they may grow strong and live in freedom. Death is that push. The infinite in its wisdom and love has forced each individual to take the next step through the mystery known as death. I do not find it very important to speculate on life after death or to debate reincarnation. The answers will be known to us soon enough. All that we have, all that is real, is now. The issue is to live fully now. That is heaven. To live in past regrets or future hopes is hell. If you would only shift your life to the now, you would know total happiness and freedom from fear. For to live in the now is to live so that there are no past regrets and no future hopes. It is to live with total individual integrity. To live life to the fullest, live each day in total harmony and integrity. How do I begin, you ask? Well, begin with the acceptance of death. Know that you will die, as have all people, great or small. Know, too, that this is the way life is meant to be. Death is your friend. Death is a step onward. Next, ask yourself, what have I not done that I want to do? Make a list of these things. Is there an old debt not settled? Is there an old hurt still festering? Is there someone you need to talk to? Are there affairs to be put in order? Have you taken steps to protect your loved ones when you cannot? Are there things you have dreamed of doing tomorrow? Do all these things now and you'll have begun to live. Do one more thing and you will be totally living. That one more thing is to know yourself, to seek out the depth within. For those who climb the path of life in search of truth, death is just one more step towards the goal. It is a step to be taken, not feared. The last fear to be discussed is the fear of the unknown. I often wonder if this, and this alone, is not the basis of all fear. Perhaps the fear of the unknown is behind the fear of death, failure, illness, pain, poverty, and loneliness. Perhaps all fear is really just this, unknown. The fear of the unknown is seen in those who seek to maintain the status quo and in those who live in traditions. It is found in the opposition to change and the clinging to the past. And it is the reason fortune tellers, soothsayers, and astrologers prosper. The fear of the unknown is a subtle fear. Do I always do things this way because I like to, or because I fear to try it another way? Where does tradition stop and superstition begin? That you must answer for yourself. There is a constant known in the universe, and that constant is change. Nothing stays the same. Every tree, every plant, every rock changes. I will be changed by the time you hear these words. You will have changed before you finish these tapes. Change is the constant of the universe. And if change is constant, then so must the unknown be constant. Perhaps you have lived with it so long that you don't realize that every moment of every day you face the unknown. Every day you have lived through countless unknowns. Every day you face a world where there is no total security. The security you have is the security you make for yourself. Knowing you can adjust enables you to live with changing weather and changing economic conditions. Knowing you can cope allows you to survive social upheavals. The security to face the unknown is within. There is no security in the physical world. You must and do face the unknown. It is inevitable. Your only choice is how you face it, with resistance or with acceptance. I choose the latter. I prefer to accept and flow with the change. By so doing, I take control. I direct the course of things. I gain power. If you have studied or practiced the martial arts, you already understand well this concept. The key is not to block the enemy, but to take control and use his force toward your ends. To face the infinite unknown is the fate of man. Seven fears control most people's lives. Seven fears write the destiny of mankind. Are you one of the few who writes his own destiny? I hope so. I hope you will have the joy and the thrill of waking up each day to create the way you choose to create it. To me, this is happiness, not wealth, nor power, nor fame, but instead the inner strength to say, I did it my way, and I'm glad for it. Fear does not enter the picture except where we let it. When we hold back and say, I can't, or I'm afraid, then and only then there is a problem. Then there is a fear to be faced and overcome, not with trepidation, but as a challenge. Every fear is an opportunity to grow. Every fear overcome is proof of growth. Here's a quote. Lord, grant me the courage to walk on when adversity is around the corner. Lord, grant me the faith to walk on when the way is dark and I am lost. Lord, grant me the strength to walk on when my legs falter and my body falls. Grant me these things, Lord, and I will fear nothing. Quote by Thomas D. Wilhite.
This is the end of this disc. The program continues on the next disc.